The Catra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Catra AI.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Today we're tackling a really significant social issue, one that's been, bubbling under the surface for a while.
Yeah, often talked about in sort of angry ways, maybe on the fringes.
Exactly, but not often with, serious data-based policy discussion. We're looking at Richard Reeves' big book of Boys and Men.
And it's a crucial read because it points out something, something we can't really ignore anymore.
Which is?
That while women have, quite rightly, made huge strides breaking down barriers, boys and men seem to be genuinely struggling.
In specific ways, right. Well, not just vaguely.
Demonstrably struggling across key parts of modern life. You look at education, you look at the job market.
And the polarization around this is just, it's intense. If you even mention male struggles, some people immediately think you're pushing back against feminism.
Right. But Reeves, he tries to cut through that. So our goal today, really, is to unpack his evidence.
We want to figure out, is this boy crisis actually real? Is it structural? Or is it just, political noise?
And Reeves points to three main areas where things seem to be going wrong for men. Education.
Okay.
Employment.
Got it.
And family life itself, how it's defined, the roles within it.
Right. And by looking at the evidence he presents, hopefully we can move beyond just blaming people.
Yeah. And get towards solutions that actually help everyone. What Reeves calls positive sum solutions.
Meaning helping men adapt doesn't mean women lose out.
Exactly. It's not a zero-sum game.
Okay, that's a really important frame. So before we get into the nitty-gritty, the data, who is Richard V. Reeves? Knowing the author's perspective is key here, isn't it?
It really is. Reeves isn't just some commentator. He's a serious scholar, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.
Brookings, right. That's a major, well-respected, nonpartisan think tank.
Mm-hmm. And his focus is on social policy, economics. He runs their Future of the Middle Class initiative. He's got form here, too, like his previous book, Dream Hoarders, very data-driven.
And I think what makes his voice stand out in this particular debate is his political background, right? He's generally seen as center-left.
Yes, exactly. He's coming from a progressive viewpoint, but he's using rigorous data, not ideology. That makes his argument really hard for people to just brush off as, some partisan attack.
He's kind of claiming an issue that maybe the left hasn't always wanted to touch.
I think that's fair to say. And you also get the sense it's personal for him. He mentions being a father of three sons.
Ah, okay. So it's not just abstract numbers.
No, there's a layer of compassion there, I think. An urgency that comes from seeing how these trends affect real families, maybe even his own.
Yeah.
It makes the analysis feel, more human.
Okay, so let's get to the book itself, Of Boys and Men. You said it's like a diagnosis and a prescription. What's the core idea, the central thesis?
The main argument is that this crisis, the struggles boys and men are facing, it's absolutely real. It's measurable in the data. And because it's measurable and structural, it demands real, targeted policy solutions.
So he's pushing back against the idea that it's just individuals failing, like men just need to try harder.
Completely. He argues it's not primarily about laziness or some kind of moral decline. The root cause is structural.
Structural in what way? What changed?
Well, basically, the world changed faster than our ideas about masculinity could keep up. Huge economic shifts. Think deindustrialization.
Right. Loss of manufacturing jobs.
Exactly. And social shifts, cultural shifts, even changes in how we structure education. All these things made that traditional male role, the sole breadwinner, kind of obsolete.
Okay.
But the problem wasn't just that the old role disappeared. It's that nothing clear, positive, and viable really emerged to replace it for many men.
So it's not that women gaining equality was the problem?
Not at all. He's explicitly pro-feminist. The problem is that society didn't really help men figure out their new place in this changed world. They were left sort of adrift.
That makes a lot of sense. A structural cause needing a structural solution. So where does Reeves see this breakdown starting? You mentioned education first.
Yeah, the education pipeline seems to be where the problems first become really visible. The stats he presents are, frankly, quite startling.
Like what?
Boys are less likely to take advanced classes in high school. Their grades are often lower, and the gap widens in college. I mean, men now make up only about 40% of U.S. college students.
40%? Wow, that's a significant minority, and it's getting worse.
The trend line suggests it is, yeah. And it starts much earlier than college. Even in elementary school, boys are often already lagging behind girls academically.
This is where he brings in that developmental biology argument, which I found really fascinating and honestly quite surprising.
Right. He's careful to say biology isn't everything, it's not destiny. But he argues that ignoring average developmental differences between boys and girls when designing systems is just, well, it's a mistake.
And the key difference he focuses on is the brain, specifically the prefrontal cortex.
Exactly, the prefrontal cortex. Think of it as the brain's CEO. It handles impulse control, planning, focusing attention, self-regulation, all that executive function stuff.
Crucial skills for succeeding in a classroom, obviously.
Absolutely. And the key finding he highlights is the developmental timing.
What about the timing?
On average, and it is just an average, the male prefrontal cortex matures about 2 years later than the female prefrontal cortex.
2 years? That seems significant.
It is. Think about what that means for a typical 5 or 6-year-old boy starting school.
Mm.
The modern classroom demands a lot of sitting still, listening, verbal skills, controlling impulses.
Skills managed by a part of the brain that, for many boys, isn't fully developed yet.
Precisely. The system, unintentionally, seems better aligned with girls' average developmental timeline at that age.
So boys might struggle not because they aren't smart or because they're bad, but because we're asking them to do things their brains aren't quite ready for.
That's the argument. It can lead to them being labeled as having behavioral problems, maybe getting misdiagnosed with things like ADHD more often, and just generally starting off their academic journey feeling like they're failing. It's a mismatch.
Okay, that's a powerful idea about education. Let's shift then from the classroom to the workplace. You mentioned employment as the second crisis area.
Yeah, and this is tied into that loss of the traditional male identity we talked about.
The decline of those old school jobs.
Exactly. Think manufacturing, mining, construction, automation, globalization. These forces just hollowed out those sectors.
And for generations, those jobs were pathways, right? You didn't necessarily need college, but you could get a decent wage, support a family, have a sense of dignity and purpose.
Absolutely. They provided identity. When those jobs vanished, millions of men, particularly those without college degrees, were kind of left high and dry, economically speaking.
And the jobs that are growing.
They've shifted. The big growth is in service industries, care work, fields that have traditionally been dominated by women. Reeves uses this acronym, HEAL.
HEAL. What does that stand for?
Health, Education, Administration, and Literacy.
Okay, let me think. Health, like nursing, physical therapy, education, teachers, administration, like office managers, paralegals, literacy, maybe librarians.
Stuff like that, yeah. These are stable, often well-paying, future-proof jobs. But men are seriously underrepresented in almost all of them.
And why is that? Is it just about skills training?
Training is part of it, but Reeves argues a big part is cultural. There's still a stigma, isn't there? Both societal and sometimes internalized by men themselves against going into caring professions or jobs seen as women's work.
Right, like we had to work hard to get girls into STEM.
Exactly. He says we need a similar deliberate effort to break down those barriers and encourage men into HEAL fields. It's about opportunity, but also about updating our cultural scripts.
Okay, education, employment. The third area was family life and sort of purpose.
Yeah, this is maybe less about economics and more existential. The old breadwinner model is eroding, as we said. But what replaces it?
For men at the top, the high earners, he talks about a gilded cage.
Yeah, the gilded cage. It's this trap where their identity is so tied to being the high status provider that they end up working insanely long hours.
Sacrificing the very family life they're supposedly working to support.
It's a real irony. They're tracked by the success script. But Reeves sees a huge positive opportunity here, too.
Which is?
Engaged fatherhood. Active, hands-on parenting.
As a new source of identity and purpose.
Exactly. And the data on this is incredibly clear. Involved fathers have a massive positive impact on their kids, emotionally, academically, you name it. It's a profoundly pro-social role for men.
But society doesn't always make it easy, does it?
Not really. We talk a good game about involved dads, but the structures often aren't there. Think about parental leave policies, for example.
It still often defaults to the mother taking the bulk of the time.
Often, yeah. We lack robust, genuinely gender-neutral systems that normalize men as co-equal caregivers right from the start. Supporting that new role requires real structural change.
Okay, so those are the three big areas. Let's maybe pull back a bit and crystallize the main themes running through the book. What are the key messages you want listeners to take away?
I think the first, and we've hit this already, but it's crucial, is that these problems are structural, not individual.
Right. It's not about blaming men.
No. It's recognizing that the world changed the rules on them, economically and socially, without really offering a clear path forward, shifting from judging individuals to fixing the system.
Okay, structural, not individual. What else?
The second big one is that gender equality is positive sum.
Meaning helping men doesn't hurt women.
Precisely. It's not a competition. Addressing the issues men face, like educational struggles or the need for new roles or mental health support, is actually the next step towards achieving genuine equality for everyone. A rising tide lifts all boats, sort of thing.
That's a really important counter to the zero-sum thinking that often poisons this debate. And a third theme.
I'd say institutional neglect. For a long time, schools, governments, workplaces, they were often hesitant to focus specifically on boys and men's issues.
Why?
Yeah.
Fear of undermining progress for women.
Perhaps partly, yeah. Or maybe just not seeing the patterns clearly enough. But the result was that problems like that widening education gap were allowed to grow and fester almost silently.
So the systems themselves kind of overlooked these emerging problems.
It seems that way. Until they became too big to ignore.
Okay, that leads us nicely into the solutions part. Reeves isn't just diagnosing, he's prescribing specific actions. Let's talk about some of his key policy ideas, maybe framed by some memorable lines or concepts from the book.
Definitely. One of the big ones tackles that education mismatch we discussed. He essentially says it's about matching our educational system to developmental biology.
And the practical application of that.
Starting boys in formal schooling a year later than girls, on average. What's sometimes called redshirting.
And the point isn't to coddle boys.
No, not at all. It's simply about aligning the start of formal, structured learning with their average developmental readiness, giving their prefrontal cortex that extra time to come online, basically. It's pragmatic.
Okay, that's a concrete educational idea. Yeah. What about the job market, the HEAL sector idea?
Right. His call there is for something ambitious. He says, we need a similarly ambitious initiative to get more men into HEAL health, education, administration, and literacy.
Just like the push for women in STEM.
Exactly the same model. Targeted scholarships, recruitment campaigns, mentorship programs, working to change the cultural perception of those jobs to make them appealing and acceptable for young men.
Actively pulling men into those growing fields makes sense. And maybe one more core idea or quote that really sums up his perspective.
I think the most powerful framing, the one that cuts through the political noise, is this. The problem is not that women are doing better. The problem is that boys and men are doing worse.
That really does flip the script, doesn't it?
It completely disarms that zero-sum argument. It says we can celebrate women's progress and simultaneously address the distinct struggles men are facing without seeing them as contradictory goals.
Okay, those are some big ideas. How can listeners apply this? Thinking practically, maybe as a parent or in the workplace or just as a citizen?
Well, for parents or educators, that redshirting idea is something concrete to consider, right? Thinking about developmental readiness for school, not just age.
And maybe advocating for more male teachers, especially in those early grades.
Absolutely. Having those positive male role models in schools is incredibly important for young boys. On the policy front, for anyone interested in workplace change.
Parental leave.
Yes. Pushing for universal, gender-neutral, paid parental leave is huge. But the key detail Reeves emphasizes is making a portion of it specifically for fathers non-transferable.
The use it or lose it idea. Why is that so critical?
Because it forces the issue. It makes it normal, expected, for dads to take significant time off. It helps break down employer assumptions and that gilded cage dynamic where men feel they can't step back from work. It fundamentally shifts the culture around caregiving.
And for employers or community leaders?
It's about investment. Investing in retraining programs for men whose industries have declined, and actively, deliberately recruiting men into those HEAL sector jobs, making it clear they are welcome and valued there, tackling the stigma head on.
So lots of practical angles there. As we wrap up our deep dive into this, what's your final takeaway? What surprised you or stuck with you the most from Reeves's analysis?
For me, I think it was the connection he makes between these sort of personal struggles of men and the larger political climate.
How so?
He argues pretty convincingly, I think, that when you have large numbers of men feeling alienated, economically insecure, unsure of their place, that creates fertile ground for resentment, for anger. And that anger can be easily exploited politically.
Fueling some of the destructive political trends we see.
Exactly. So addressing these issues isn't just about helping individual men. It's actually crucial for social stability and, frankly, the health of our democracy. That linkage felt really powerful and quite urgent.
Yeah, that adds another layer entirely. For me, the main takeaway is actually quite hopeful, despite the difficult diagnosis.
Oh, I agree.
Because Reeves frames this not as some irreversible decline of masculinity, but as a structural problem. And structural problems, well, they have structural solutions.
Like redshirting or HEAL initiatives or better parental leave.
Exactly. These aren't pie-in-the-sky ideas. They're concrete, pragmatic policies that can make a real difference. And the vision he offers for a positive way forward, focusing on engaged, hands-on fatherhood as a core part of modern male identity that feels achievable. It feels pro-social, constructive.
A path forward based on contribution and connection, not just economic status.
Right. It suggests there is a positive adaptation possible for men in the 21st century. We just need to build the structures to support it. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekaktra Foundation.